Hello everyone, I'm Olivia Newton-John as adult woman in Spring Awakening at the Muni.
And I'm Rodney Dangerfield as Pseudolus in the Hollywood Bowl's Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
And this podcast won't run a week, your bi-weekly musical theater podcast where we talk about musicals. God, has Rodney Dangerfield ever been in a musical?
Probably not. I don't know.
I hope that he has. Just, like, secretly. Like, that's what he does in his free time. Or did.
Beyond the grave.
Is he still alive? No. I don't know.
Absolutely not.
I don't know. It all blends together. How the hell are ya?
I'm fine. I'm, like, you know, like, when you get your shirt caught on the door, or your belt loop caught on the door as you're walking out the door? That's the kind of morning I'm having. So I'm fine.
Yeah. I get that.
A light gray sweatshirt and immediately spilled coffee on it.
Yep. Been there. It's the worst.
The worst. How are you?
It's the worst. I'm good. You know, I'm back at work. Found out that I missed Paul Rudd stopping by the store I work at, so I'm a little upset about that.
Yeah, that's really shitty.
Well, I'm trying to collect all of the Wet Hot American Summer cast while I work there. Like, I've sold to Ken Marino. He's in it. I've sold to Amy Poehler. She's in it. Paul Rudd was obviously the next possible. It's all right. Elizabeth Banks and Bradley Cooper will stop by soon, and I can sell them t-shirts or something.
There you go.
Yeah, but aside from that, I'm good. We took a little podcast field trip and saw Light in the Piazza at City Center this week.
Yes, we fucking did. And it was beautiful.
Beautiful. So fucking beautiful.
Really beautiful. Ruthie Ann Miles was actually perfection.
My God. Truly. I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Just a masterclass of, like, being grounded and graceful and
and just very, like, in her body and but yet, like, not taking herself too seriously.
Yeah She was so funny.
I did not realize the musical was as funny as it is.
Me either. And those are the things you miss when all you know are
the highlights,
the cast recordings. Yeah. So. I'm really glad that we got to see it. It was a very beautiful production. Very cool. And it's still running. Well, I don't know when it closes, but...
I mean, I think we saw opening night.
Slay. Unintentional.
I know.
But great. Yeah, if you can see it, listeners, go see it. If not, then you missed out. Sucks to
and here's
you.
What you missed on Glee. Did you see that TikTok, speaking of Glee, of that person who made a bag that said,
oh, yes,
Alex Newell won a Tony before Leah Michelle, and that's what you missed on Glee?
Yes, I did see that. Oh my gosh. Wait, we haven't talked about the Tonys on
we
the
haven't
yet?
Talked about the Tonys.
Oh my God. Well, the Tony Awards were, like, what, 2 weeks ago now? Week and a half?
Yeah.
A crazy time amidst the writer's strike. Although I thought they did really well. It was nice that the hokey, like, jokes and stuff were kind of trimmed.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as a slight to the people who normally write that. It's all fun and I do enjoy it, but it's also nice to sometimes have something different, you know?
Well, I thought that it wasn't so much like that's not a slight to the writers. It's, you don't need a host to make jokes for the camera. You know, like...
Yeah.
I mean, it's more enjoyable for the audience, probably. But I'm also kind of like, just get to it.
Yeah.
It's already so long.
I would rather see performances than watch the host or whoever make jokes.
Agreed.
Personally, that's what I would prefer.
Like, do an opening monologue or an opening number and, like, mm-hmm. have some things that you need transitions for. But, like, I don't want to see you sit and take a selfie.
No.
I don't want that stuff. I'm good.
No, I'm not really into that. But I loved the opening number.
The opening number was great. I loved the homage to, like, past Tony winners. Like,
mm-hmm.
like doing the Hot Honey Rag. And which Julianne Hough. I have never in my life been more attracted to Julianne Hough than I was watching her do the Hot Honey Rag.
You know what? That's fair. I sat and I was like, why the fuck is Julianne Hough here? Get off my screen. Like, she looks great, but, like, I just am not interested.
But then she did that. Julianne.
Well, she did that, and I was like, that was cool.
No. Oh, my God, it was so good.
It was so good. It was very good.
She was, like, electric. I really, like, it's hard to do this, but I couldn't take my eyes off her, and Ariana DeBose was on stage with her, and I couldn't stop looking at Julianne Hough.
That's a pretty big testament.
That's a big testament, because Ariana DeBose is on stage, and you just can't. She just has, like, a light around her.
She really does.
I don't know. There was just something about Julianne Hough where I was like, I forget how amazing of a dancer she is.
Yeah, she was really in her wheelhouse there, for sure. Like,
my God. And she had that really cool, like, edgy outfit on. Like, it just was, mm-hmm. it was just a recipe for success. And it was shocking, too, because you're like, Julianne Hough, oh, yeah. You know?
Oh, yeah. Where's her brother husband? Got to be around her somewhere.
Oh my God. I just thought that was, like, a highlight of the night for me. I was like, what? Like, kind of like, let's get her in Chicago. I'd go watch that stunt casting.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that would make sense to me, honestly, mm-hmm. as far as, like, stunt casting goes. That would make very, very good sense.
Yeah.
Lea Michele. Lea Michele, why was she there? Why did she perform? Well, you know what? She's on Broadway. She could be in attendance at the Tony Awards. That's fine. But, like, she did not need to perform. She did not need to close the show. She didn't need to perform, period.
No.
Much less close the whole thing.
She closed the whole show. When Funny Girl didn't even get to perform the year that they were nominated.
No. Also, we saw her perform the same number, like, almost 15 years ago. And I'm bored.
Bored.
Of Lea Michele singing Don't Rain on My Parade. It's not exciting. It was the first three times, but now I'm like, get a new shtick.
Well, and this is hard to do, but I'm getting kind of bored of that song.
Yeah, me too.
And I hate to say it.
I don't. I'm bored of that song. There are just as good songs that accomplish similar things.
I just hate it because, I mean, that show was so revolutionary in its time, and now it's just, I mean, I can see why it's not been done.
Yeah.
Because you can't top Barbra Streisand. Like,
no.
It's just
I really think that Julie Binko does her, like, level best. And I think that she is, of everyone else that I've seen perform it, I think she comes the closest, in my opinion,
to
Barbra.
Well, she does it on her own. Like, it's her own version. Yeah, and
exactly.
And I think it's amazing for her that she got to do that. But they tried to stunt cast it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, what does that show do? It still brings out someone who is not a star and makes them a star, right? Like, you had these two stunt casts that are, I mean, fine, right? I get why we cast Lea Michele. I get it. I really do. If you're going to put her back on Broadway, that's the show to put her back on Broadway in.
Sure.
However, she doesn't need to be brought up to stardom. That show is a show that is made to make someone a star.
Yeah.
So, no one cares about Lea Michele doing it. It's fine, no. Whatever. But who we do care about is Julie Benko, because mm-hmm. she deserves to be brought up to be a star, because she's doing it on her own. It's surprising, it's interesting, you don't know what it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. She's making her own choices.
Yeah, like Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, which is why it's so good.
Exactly.
Ugh, yeah, but that was the Tony.
The highlight of Lea Michele's performance is when the camera pans behind her and she goes, "Oh, march my band."
Like, just
stupid arms of hers.
Flinging her little arms.
God, girl. It just was like so. It wasn't even that good.
No, it wasn't that good. And I mean, look, we can talk Tony performances if you want. That wasn't that good. I understand why they picked it, but I'm tired of This Is Not Over Yet from Parade.
Yeah.
Well, I love that song. I love that song, but I'm tired of it. Bring out, like, the old Red Hills of Home. Do a little medley or something. Yeah. But, like, well, come on.
I'm surprised they didn't do any medleys. Like,
yeah, not one.
Yeah. I thought about the Color Purple medley, like how they mm-hmm. showcased the ensemble.
Yeah, I mean, the closest that they came was with Shucked.
Yeah.
But it was just that one little, like, Alex Newell gets 16 bars.
Well, they started, and I was like, are they really not going to showcase Alex Newell? That's, like, the reason to go see this show.
Mm-hmm. What can you do?
Well, I don't know, though. I can't remember if I talked about this. So, when I saw Shucked, the sleeper hit for me was Andrew Durand singing Somebody Will.
Yeah, no, he's so good. The cast of Shucked is so good.
So good. I knew that independently owned was obviously, yeah, like, the course. Song. And rightfully so. Like,
yeah.
Alex Newell, like, I was... Say what you want about Alex Newell. The bitch can sing.
Bitch can sing.
Holy. And being in the audience hearing them sing was a different experience.
Like, yeah.
You couldn't help but stand up after they sang. And it looked as if they weren't even trying that hard. And I was like,
yeah.
What if you were? Like, what could you, you know, like, you yeah, don't like, need to try that hard.
If this is like just a Tuesday for you, what is a challenge?
I literally saw the Tuesday night performance, and it was at a staged reading because it was the day that all the fire, the mm-hmm, Canadian fires smog and run everything. Off. Yeah, the air quality alert. That's the word I was looking for. And the cast brought it. Like, they did such a good job, and you know, I obviously had I understood where they were coming from, because we had to do something similar during Stranger Things, and I knew how stressful that was. But the performances that they gave, even with that stress, I was like, oh bitch.
Yeah.
So maybe they were like being like, I'm gonna sing the house down because this is ridiculous that we're doing this right now.
Yeah. I mean,
when Alex Newell said, after Alex Newell finished, I stood up out of my chair and I went, there is an air quality alert. Because I was like, you're singing like that and there is smog in the air.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out.
Alex is like, just pulls out a pack of like Marlboro Reds and just like, just like four, just like across their mouth.
I mean, geez Louise.
Oh my God.
And damn, do I want to play that part.
You should play that part. You would be so good. I also saw, just as a little bit of you saw Shucked, I saw Once Upon a One More Time, which just opened last night as of the time we're recording this. So I saw a preview. That shit is wild. It's wild. I had so much fun. Once I, like, really got my bearings of, like, what the fuck is going on, I had a blast.
I love it.
Go under the influence of something. If that's something that you enjoy doing, that's something I enjoy doing. So have a little cocktail, take a little edible, whatever your prerogative is, and just go in to have fun. They give you these, like, light-up bracelets. That there's, like, a little light show thing. There's a mega mix at the end, because of course there is. And Jennifer Samard is fucking killing it. She's a true, like, star in that show. So, go see Once Upon a One More Time. I need it to run long enough for me to see it again. So,
yeah, Once Upon a One More Time, like, literally, I love Jennifer Samard so much, and I have never seen her live, and I really want to see her live. Her in Disaster, the musical, which you put me on, bitch.
Which is another role you will play.
I would love. She's one of those people that I'm like, oh yes, someone else I can follow their career.
Absolutely. No, it's...
And I think she's about to be in her prime.
I agree. She's really... In this show, she's kind of serving, like, Jennifer Coolidge meets Karen Walker, but singing Britney Spears. And it's really just so, like, it's delicious. It's so good. And, like, the whole cast is obviously incredibly talented. The dancing is so good. Prince Charming, who's played by Justin Guarini, I think is how you pronounce his last name. I could be wrong. From season one of American Idol, from Justin to Kelly.
Oh my God.
Justin. What? He plays Prince Charming, and he is fucking incredible as well. He sings Oops, I Did It Again. They give him and Jennifer, like, the best songs, in my opinion. Now, like, obviously, there are some things that I didn't love. Why are all the princesses stick figures? Why are they all so skinny? That being said, when... And I told Grace this because I saw it with my friends from Broadway Bods. I was like, when Broadway Bods does Once Upon a One More Time, it's going to be incredible. It's going to be a real star moment because holy shit, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Speaking of Broadway Bods, I'll be doing their... I'll be a special guest at their gala on July 1st. So, I don't know
how this will be out before then, so...
Yeah, I don't know how, tickets. But if you want, get your tickets. That'll be fun. I'll be doing a fun little number that you won't want to miss.
Nope.
So,
no, it's going to be great.
That I've been wanting to do for a long time, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think we've put it off long enough. Do we want to talk? Do we want to talk about this week's show?
I guess.
Yeah. So we're talking about Dear World this episode. And it's a show, and it was on a stage, and Angela Lansbury was in it. And that's all I know about it.
Well, you basically took all of the trivia. I'm just kidding.
What if that was truly it? It's just.
I mean, it's not far away. So... The critics basically said what you said. That it's like, it's a show, and Angela Lansbury is in it. And she is the reason to see it. So, this is a musical by Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee. Not to be confused with the Civil War general. Oh, yeah.
I was like, why is that name familiar?
Yes, different person. But music and lyrics are by Jerry Herman. And it's based on Maurice Valenci's adaptation of Jean Giraudoux's play, The Mad Woman of Chalet. So it is an adaptation of an adaptation. We're already starting strong. So Jerry Herman became the first composer and first composer lyricist to have three productions running at the same time on Broadway when this was on in 1969.
Good for him.
Yes. We went to the moon in 1969.
Yep. That was one of them. When's that coming to Broadway?
That already did, because it was during this, if you let me get my joke out. Oh.
Sorry, I got excited.
It's okay. I know you didn't know that Jerry Herman wrote that.
I really didn't. That was a fun fact.
Previews proved difficult with several script and score changes and even directorial changes. Lucia Victor, who was a director of Hello Dolly revival, was set to direct, but ultimately left because of, according to the New York Times, quote-unquote, artistic differences with Angela Lansbury, which is so shocking to me, because I don't... When I think of Angela Lansbury, I don't think of someone who has artistic differences with anyone.
Yeah. So I assume it must have been Lucia was the problem.
I guess.
I assume. She was the problem in this situation.
Yeah.
I guess. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Angela Lansbury was a raging bitch. I'll never know.
You never know, right?
Yeah.
So then Peter Glenville was then hired, but was resigned, after bad reviews during their out-of-town Boston tryouts. Which I'm like, work.
Yeah. He saw the writing on the wall. He said,
oop. Yeah, said, not for me.
Yeah.
So then Joe Layton was then hired, but and also replaced the choreographer Donald Sadler, and that's who directed the Broadway production. Directed and choreographed. Work. So then, finally, the musical opened on Broadway at the Mark Hollinger Theater. Do you know where that is?
No.
The Mark Hollinger Theater is the Times Square Church.
Okay.
So, that's happening right there now. Yep.
Great.
In February of 1969, and then it closed the same year on May 31st after 132 performances and 45 previews.
Ooh.
Yes. After closing on Broadway, Herman, Lawrence, and Lee teamed back up and rewrote the show, quote, putting back the intimacy that had been undermined on Broadway, end quote. So, something that they thought was what sealed Dear World's fate was that the massive production overwhelmed the simplicity of the story that they were trying to tell. So...
Okay, alright.
Which, I'm not gonna lie, I agree.
Sure.
So then, here's a couple other productions, and it gets confusing, so stick with me.
I'm with you.
There was a revision by David Thompson, which premiered at Goodspeed in Connecticut in November of 2000, and it ran until December of 2000. It included a few songs that were written after the musical closed. So David Thompson is now like a writer within the universe of Dear World, right?
Okay.
So there's two versions of the show out at this point. There's the revised version of the Broadway production that Herman, Lee, and Lawrence revised. And now there's a new version that is revised by David Thompson. Okay?
All right.
So here we go. We've got two versions. There was a concert version of the revised Herman, Lawrence, and Lee production at 42nd Street Moon Theater in San Francisco in September 2000. Then there was another revised version of Thompson's. So David Thompson revised his revision again.
Okay.
And produced it in Utah in 2002. Then Canada did that production, the newly revised. Finally, we have a production that's not been revised. Finally did that production in 2012. Then a UK premiere happened in London in 2013, and it ran through March of that year. So February to March is, like, the golden time for this show.
Sure. It does really well in, like, late winter.
Yeah, February to March. And that starred Betty Buckley. Then the York Theatre Company produced, which is here in New York, produced the musical in February 2017, and it ran through March 2017, and it starred Tyne Daly, who reprised her role as the Countess in a concert version of 2016 in Los Angeles at the Valley Arts Center.
Okay.
Now we have the New York Encores production that starred Donna Murphy in March of 2023.
Jesus. The timing. There's got to be something in the contract of, like, it has to be done in February or March.
It's like Robert E. Lee's birthday.
Yeah.
The Civil War.
Yeah, the Civil War guy. Oh my god. All of these revisions are really just giving, like, Dear World Taylor's version to me.
Truly. What's oh my god.
Which one's the real version?
It's Dear World, the Robert E. Lee, the Civil War guy's version.
The 10 minute version. He got his hands.
Yeah,
the 10 minute play.
And it's, like, very uncomfortable.
Yeah, everyone hates it.
Yeah, it's like, why are we watching this? So I found this video of Angela Lansbury talking about her time in Dear World, and I think it's from PBS, but she said, "Dear World was vocally the best I ever managed. Through the help of Don Pippin, who was their conductor, he didn't hit me over the head with things. He simply offered them to me."
Aww.
And I thought that was really lovely. She then goes on to say that everything that he gave her and taught her during this production, she used for the rest of her career. And I just thought I thought that was really special, because the way that she's talking about him offering things rather than, you know, it just feels like that was kind of where we are leading ourselves into now when it comes to direction and teaching. And so to hear that had success in a world where everyone was a little bit more militant about the way that they taught and directed, is just really, I don't know, special to me. That's really exciting.
How lovely.
So, yeah. So I just thought that was really great. And for Angela Lansbury to be like, this was the best I ever was vocally. I mean, yeah, she sings in this show. She sings. But it's a role for an alto. And she said that, like, her voice was, like, what were the words? Not gritty, but just, like, a mess, basically. She was just like, my vocals were a mess before this show. I was like, I don't know.
I don't know about that. You were doing pretty well.
Yeah, pretty well. So the show won 2 Tony Awards. It won Best Actress for Miss Lansbury and Best Scenic Design.
Okay.
So, how about that?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Yeah, and that's really it. The trivia.
Yeah.
Folks, this is going to be a short episode because the plot is simple. It's real simple.
Just paper thin.
It's real, and it just feels like they added, and so I really understand when the team said that the show had been undermined because of how massive the Broadway show became. Mm-hmm. Because the script or the book is simple. It's A thing happens, so then B things needs to happen, and then C equals D. Like, it's just it's really just as simple as that. There's no hijinks, there's no kerfuffles. It's just getting to the end. And, you know, it's a simple story in that way. So this next section is not going to take very long.
Great.
So we meet the Countess, who is this woman in her 80s, who is extremely, like, she thinks of herself as very high status, and she's not. She lives in the basement of this cafe in Paris, and she has gone mad because of a lover that she left, or that has been left behind in her past. And she's still never been, she never rectified that, so she has gone mad. That's where we start.
Been there, girl.
And she's searching for this 9-foot-long boa. That's like a beeklot.
Like a snake? Or like a feather boa?
A feather boa. She's looking for a 9-foot-long feather boa.
Boa constrictor.
This is a simple plot. So she's looking for this boa constrictor. She's looking for this 9-foot-long boa, feather boa that her lover gave her and she, like, cannot find. And she's 80 and senile, so, you know.
Rough.
So then we meet these really wealthy people who live in Paris, and they're congressmen, and they're trying to, or excuse me, I said congressmen, I meant businessmen, who, same thing, who, who are trying to, dig up the oil that's under the city. They discover that there's oil under the city, and they want to dig it up and then make lots of money off of it. And what we discover is that if they dig up that oil, they'll have to buy out the cafe and destroy it so they can drum up the oil, right?
Sure.
Sure. So
makes sense to me.
So the Countess is obviously like, no, we don't want to do that. The people who work in the cafe, there's this young prostitute, and there is a young lover, like, of sorts. That's kind of just why he's there.
All right.
He tries to kill himself at one point, and then before the show, and then he's brought in, and it's like, oh, look, a handsome boy. You know.
He's fine. Don't worry about it.
And they fight to, like, keep the, they quote unquote fight to keep the cafe running. They don't fight very hard. They're just like, we don't want this to happen.
Please. Boo.
Please, no. And they sing a bunch of songs about why they don't want it to happen, and the businessmen sing about why they do, and they then do this fake trial about why it's not good that the rich are trying to bring out the poor, and they vote. It's not a real trial, by the way. It's with the Countess's two friends, who are also old senile women. One carries an invisible dog around, which I watched a production from Mount Clare University online. Like, they have, like, a in-studio production or whatever that they put up that they did during COVID. And I thought, oh my god, this is just low budget. So they're like, oh, it'd be funny if she carried a fake dog, like, pretending there's a dog as, like, space object work. No, that's part of the plot. That it is an invisible dog. And at one point, like, there's a joke that she's like, oh, my dog. And then she looks down, she goes, oh, I left my dog at home today. Which is like, what?
Okay.
I did for a second. I was holding Seymour as I was, like, reading and, like, watching that part. And I looked down and I was like, what if he's not real? And I have just, like, envisioned this dog that I adore so much. You know, here we are.
You have a lot of pictures of just, like, an empty room on your phone.
That is terrifying. Well, you never know. Kiss her now while she's young.
Okay, so, yeah, so they bring in these two women who are just as senile. It's giving Grey Gardens.
Slay.
To decide if they're going to do something about this, and they decide, yes. They're great. Guilty. They're guilty of being bad people. That's what they... Verdict.
That's the verdict. You're guilty.
Guilty. Yes. And so then the act closes, and they decide to go off and save the town. There is a sewer system beneath the cafe.
Sure.
And there is a sewer man who we meet who walks the sewers and works down there. Yes, maybe? Yes. And he sings a song earlier about how, like, garbage can also be art and la la la, which is, like, a beautiful message.
Sure.
A silly little song with a beautiful message. The Countess goes down and, like, sees the sewers, this, like, trap door to get to the sewers that's underneath the cafe. It looks down the pathway and is like, oh, what if I go down there? And he's like, no, you mustn't, because I got lost down there one time, and I thought I'd never get out. If you went down, Countess, you would absolutely not get out, because you're a crazy old lady, and you don't know how to do anything. My words.
Sure.
But, so, we find out that the sewer system is very confusing, and people have gotten lost down there and have died.
Sure.
So, he almost died. Yeah. He almost died, but then he didn't. And he's lived to tell the tale. So, the two lovers come together after a rousing, like, number of, oh, like, you have to kiss her right now because you need to fall in love, right? Sure. The big, beautiful, that's one of the big songs from the show. Kiss her now while she's young. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I sang it in college. That's the only information I knew about this show.
Cheers to that.
Yes. And then the businessmen are like, yay, we're going to take over the cafe. We're going to get the oil. We're all going to be rich. And then the Countess is like, oh, please, come here. Let me show you something. You can go celebrate. She pretends to be deaf so she can, like, help. I don't exactly understand why she can hear. She's pretending to be deaf so she can hear what they're planning, I think. And so she pretends to be deaf, and then she signs this paper, and then she's like, oh, look, go celebrate this way. And sends them down the trap door into the sewers. And they die. And then everyone is saved. End of show.
You know what? Good for her. First and foremost. What an interesting little piece.
Yeah.
I don't even really know what to say. It's,
I mean, so there's obvious. Strange. I was gonna say there's obviously other things that happen. That's not really true.
Like, no, it's like that's pretty much it. That's it, the story, and
it just, as I was watching it, I was like, there is so much fluff in this,
yeah,
for no reason.
Yeah, like condense.
Well, condense. They can't condense it because then it wouldn't be a show. Like,
hey, that's okay too.
Yeah.
That's okay too.
That's the plot.
I mean, I bet Donna Murphy was very funny at City Center.
The reason to do this show is to showcase the woman who plays the Countess.
Sure.
It is a powerhouse role. It is such a funny role. But if you don't have a strong Countess, like, there is literally no reason to watch this show.
I believe that.
It's like, it's similar to how Millie is written, where it's, there is not much else. The other people, mm-hmm, can have, like, fun little bits, but there's not much of a show if you don't have an amazing Millie Dilmau.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that. It's very interesting whenever I come across shows like that, because my first thought is, how did this get as far as it did? I mean, it's a knockout performer. Yeah, Angela Lansbury or, you know, Sutton Foster and the Millie thing. But, like, you have a knockout performer who just carries the show, and people maybe don't realize that there's really not that much going on aside from that until...
That person's not in anymore.
Exactly.
Dear Evan Hansen is that way.
Yeah. Dear Evan Hansen, rough.
Well, I mean, like, that's truly, another show like that.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah, I would not have, I've never seen Dear Evan Hansen. I don't have any desire to. The only time I would have wanted to see it was with Ben Platt.
Yeah, I mean,
just
but
to see him.
It clearly didn't work after he left, you know. Yeah. They had some people come in and do it, but.
Sure. And, like, that's, yeah. So, it's very interesting, and. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about Dear Evan Hansen because I was like, do they even really do that anymore? But yeah, they absolutely do.
Absolutely
do.
I mean, I would argue Bad Cinderella, they thought it was going to be the lead, but it actually was Carolee Carmillo.
Yeah.
You know, it's
definitely.
It happens all the time. Like, that's why they think stunt casting works, but it's like, mm-hmm. No, if the role is not. Like, if you don't have someone that's, like, making the show special, then it's not... Then the show, if the show is not strong, then you can't just rely...
Well, you can't rely on someone, because what happens if they get a better offer? And if they're so good that they're lifting a show up so much, then they're probably going to get a better offer. You know?
Yeah.
What an interest. Yeah, I'm curious. I've not seen any. We kind of briefly before we started recording talked about Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
And a little part of me is wondering if Roger Bart as the professor, the doctor.
Yeah, the doctor.
Is going to be something similar. Just because, like, that's such a character.
Yeah.
Anyway, and Roger Bart is so good at roles like that. I'm going to be interested to see if something similar happens with that show.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we'll probably discover is that Michael J. Fox was such a special piece of that puzzle that you can't really do it without him. And not to say that there's anything wrong with that performers that are doing it, but Michael J. Fox was special.
Yeah.
As Marty McFly.
Yeah.
And Christopher Lloyd is amazing, but Christopher Lloyd, a character like that.
Yeah. A character like that is incredibly specific in that, like, it's Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah.
But because it's so specific in just the way that it was written for the film, I think translating it to stage, they took time to, like, shift it, mm-hmm. I would assume, since Christopher Lloyd is not coming to Broadway with it. Clearly. Yeah. But Marty McFly feels like deceptively like, oh, anyone can do it.
Exactly. And I think something that made Legally Blonde shine is that they found someone and they took the time. And again, we're saying this without knowing what Back to the Future is, right? We're hypothesizing.
Yeah.
But what made Legally Blonde so special is that they did find someone that had her own light.
Mm-hmm.
A la Reese Witherspoon, but different. Like, it was a totally different light, and it made it like Broadway's Elle Woods rather than like, we're gonna do it exactly like we did it in the movie, which is not an easy thing to do. Like, it's not Halle Bailey in Little Mermaid. Like, mm-hmm. same thing. It's, she, like, brought her own mermaid, and it's like, that's the people's mermaid. Like,
yeah.
There we go, you know?
If you're going to adapt a beloved story, adapt it, but know that you're going to have to shift it because people change as time changes and people don't want to see the same thing.
No, it's not interesting.
Despite what everyone wants you to believe, people do not just want to see, like, the Mean Girls movie on stage.
No.
They want to see something different. Similar, but
they
different.
Don't want it. Yeah, they don't want it too different.
Yeah. Like, keep some key moments, but, like, you know, evolve it. Yeah. But it is very interesting that this show, unlike a lot of shows, really gives that star moment, that real, I would say, career making, if you haven't already made your career before this, which I feel like you must, but to an older woman.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah, no.
Not really. Like, I mean,
well, and people were upset that Angela Lansbury was playing an 80-year-old woman at the time, because she wasn't.
Sure.
An 80-year-old woman.
Yeah, I get that.
And she was in a time in her career that she didn't know what her next job was going to be when she did this. She had done MAME, I think is what she said. Mm-hmm. And she didn't do the movie. And this part was originally written for Katharine Hepburn.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I know.
I wonder what that would have been like.
Probably very good.
Very good, but also different.
Very funny.
Very, very different.
Dry.
Yeah, so dry.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so.
Crumbly. It's always I always get excited when I see shows, like, lift up older women, now that I'm getting a little bit older. It's nice to see, like, oh, no, women. This is awful, but no, women still have worth even as they get older. You're still,
I haven't seen that, but sure.
Maybe someday you will.
Maybe someday. I agree with you. Like, seeing Light in the Piazza and connecting with the mother.
God, Ruthie Ann Miles is a star. I mean, I knew she was, but she's a star.
Yeah, but, yeah, she was... I had just never seen her live.
Me either. It was crazy. I knew I liked her, but, wow.
Yeah.
Well...
Do we want to do Dreamcast?
Let's Dreamcast this bitch. So, I did my Dreamcasting based off of a casting breakdown that I found.
Oh, great.
Oh, I will say one more thing before we do. I do love that if you go to, like, look up information, and you go to, I think it's Concord Theatricals that has the rights for it. It's like the cast, 4 women, 2 men. And I'm like, yeah, as it should be.
Which is not true, though.
I'm curious if they do, like, double casting. I mean, they must.
They must.
But that was very exciting. But I only ended up casting...
And maybe the production I watched, maybe they, like, split roles to help people have more roles.
I mean, it was a collegiate production, so I feel like that would make sense. But I cast because I thought that the 3 countesses were all leads, basically.
Yeah.
I was like, it's a trio of old women causing drama. So I cast them, and then I cast the, like, I guess young lover guy.
Yeah.
And that was all I cast because...
You didn't cast the woman?
I listened to her song from when... I mean, the main countess?
The lover.
Oh, no, because I listened to her song and I was like, oh, any soprano can do that.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I don't know, like...
Yeah.
Let me just... watch the, like, Jimmys or something next year. I'll pick one of those sopranos, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Great. But I did, for the, like, 3 older women, I gave myself a little theme, because I thought it would be fun. Who did you cast?
What? No, you got to start now. You talked up your theme.
I know. Are you kidding? Okay. So I'll do. So Aurelia is the main countess.
Mm-hmm.
And I cast Stephanie J. Block.
What?
Okay. I cast Stephanie J. Block. Now this is all like when they are the proper ages. Okay.
What is your theme about to be?
Then for Gabrielle, who was listed as a soprano, I couldn't tell you anything else about her.
She's the invisible dog, I think.
Oh, perfect. I cast Megan Hilty.
Okay, I know what your theme is, and I thought that's where you were going.
And then for Constance, who is listed as an alto, the only thing I know about her, I cast Allison Janney.
Work. So 9 to 5, the musical.
Three scheming older women, when they're all the proper ages, of course. Come on. It'd be great.
I actually would flip. I think that's smart. Very smart. I would flip Stephanie J. Block and...
That was my initial instinct. Allison Janney. Yeah.
Allison Janney, yeah.
I was like, I don't really have a good understanding of how vocally demanding the role is. And I know Stephanie J. Block can sing it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure about Allison Janney. But I think Allison Janney would be a more interesting choice.
Yeah, I think you need someone who is an actor first.
Great. Then we'll switch
roles.
That's fine. I'm not married. It's just got to be those three women.
I love. Well, so I didn't initially cast all three women. But because you did a theme, I'm gonna do a theme based off the woman that I cast.
Perfect.
And you're gonna think you know my theme, but it's not what you think it is, so just wait until I get to the third woman.
Okay.
The Countess is Christine Baranski.
Okay.
Period.
Period.
No notes.
Yeah.
So then the invisible dog lady
Gabrielle.
Will be... Oh, excuse me. Yes, okay. So the invisible dog lady is going to be Audra McDonald.
Okay.
And then the alto is going to be Meryl Streep.
Absolutely.
And it's them doing Ladies in Lunch.
Yes. I would love to see that.
Yeah.
I think Christine Baranski as the Countess is really great casting.
I agree.
Really, really solid casting. God.
She would be really, really good. And it's like, there is a world where she's gonna do this.
Yeah.
God. Donna Murphy was great casting.
Donna Murphy was great casting. Even though I, like, was looking at her face as I was thinking, I was like, Donna Murphy would be really good in this role.
I know.
I was like, no, duh. She's literally right in front of you in the show. Yeah. I would be interested to see those three do Mamma Mia.
Well, I switched the order up so then, because I was going to be like, you're going to think I'm doing Mamma Mia, but I'm not.
It was funny. My first thought was Mamma Mia, but then I was like, no, I think she's going to do the Ladies Who Lunch Treat.
Yeah.
Or those three doing 9 to 5. I would see production.
Yeah. Oh my god, I would love to see Audra McDonald's either Judy or Dora Lee, honestly.
Truly. Yeah, she would kill it. Kill it.
You know what? I thought about this the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I was... Okay, wow, two thoughts just popped into my brain. One, I was watching the 2009 Tony's performance, like, opening number.
Sure. Yes.
Y'all, if you have not watched that before, go watch it. It is utter chaos. You and I saw almost every single show that was nominated that year.
Yep.
But it was the most chaotic opening number I've ever seen. That's the year that Bret Michaels got hit in the head with the scrim. Yeah.
I think about that moment all the time, just watching his little hat get knocked off of his head.
Yeah. And being like, oh. Well, and then them just... panning over to Stalker Channing singing Pal Joey.
Yeah.
Anyway, it is a giant medley of every single show that was nominated.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much. And it is messy, and Shrek performs right before 9 to 5, and Dolly Parton comes out as the Shrek cast is making a like, parting the Red Seas, parting the swamp.
Yeah.
So Dolly can come through, like, the angel that she is. So funny. Just, like, whoever, I saw a TikTok comment that was, like, whoever decided to put Dolly Parton directly after Shrek the Musical needs to get a pay raise.
Absolutely. They need to own the building.
Yeah. So, anyway, I was watching that performance, and I saw the 9 to 5 women, and I was, like, maturity is understanding that you are not going to be playing Judy, nor are you going to play Dora Lee. But you will play Roz, and then you will play Violet. That's maturity for me.
Maturity. But you know what? You're one of the boys. A sly.
No.
A sly.
It's just being like, my problem isn't the Elfie or Glinda problem, which again, I'm never going to be Elfie or Glinda, unfortunately. That's also maturity. I'm going to be Madame Morrible. Many years I have waited. But my problem is the 9 to 5 women. Like, who am I? And I learned recently that I am Roz.
Yeah.
One of the boys. So, you know.
You know what? Maturity looks good on you.
Thanks. It's just so funny because, like, something that you and I talk about all the time is type, 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 type. And I've always felt really confident in my type. And I think that I do know what my type is. But I'm realizing post Stranger Things what my type is actually at this moment in my life.
Yeah. And I think that something younger actors really need to understand is your type does not equal your capabilities at all.
Yeah.
Like, you are absolutely capable of playing Judy or Dora Lee in 9 to 5. Like, no doubt in my mind, you would knock them both out of the park. And I know that for me, I always equated type with my capabilities, and that was something that always made me feel.
It's easy to do.
Yeah. But it's just not true. And,
no.
You know, I think if any young actors are listening, just know that your type isn't your capabilities, and you can do anything, but the industry might only see you as certain things, unfortunately.
Yeah, and, you know, I said this to a friend of the podcast, Garrett. I said, why have I been trying for so long? Again, like, I feel very confident what my type is. I am the comedic villain, and I love that. But the comedic villain is not in every single show, right? Like, there, and sometimes the comedic villain is also played by a man, you know? So, like, I would love to play those roles, but I'm not going to in every show.
Yeah.
And so what else is there? And that type is still in most shows, but it's just expanding your mind to, like, which ones they are. So anyway, that being said, I was talking to Garrett, and I said, why have I been trying to put on pants that they fit, but I kind of have to, like, lay on my bed and button and zip up and then, like, eat a light meal that day, you know, to, like, fit perfectly in? When I have a pair of pants in my drawer that are my favorite pants that I can throw on easily and I can do whatever I want that day. I'm comfortable. I can move around. I can do my thing. Like, why am I trying to just fit in a pair of pants that don't fit? And again, not that I can't.
No, you can if you want to.
If I want to. But
you don't
why do I? And it just makes auditioning so much easier. So... Yeah. It just was a big realization that I've had recently. So if anybody else is struggling with that thought, I think what you said is so perfect. It's like, it's not what you're capable of that we're looking at. you are capable of whatever you put your mind to, and your talent is unmatched. It's just, where do you fit in this puzzle?
Yeah. That, like, you're not...
Right now.
That a puzzle that someone else is doing.
Yeah. It's a superpower knowing where you fit. Because if you are putting on the pants that fit, then you're going to be cast. That's it. Yeah.
You're making yourself a corner piece in this puzzle.
Yeah. And eventually, whenever you've put on the pants that fit over and over and over, you're going to get enough trust in the industry that they'll go, hey, what part do you want to play? I'd love to sing Judy, please. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be so interesting.
Yeah, I know.
Or whatever.
Yeah, you know what I mean? No. I mean, yeah, I think that you and I, in very different ways, obviously, have had, like, similar moments of being like, huh, in regards to, like, how we look at ourselves. Because, like, I had a similar thing with Assassins. So I think it comes with age.
Well, it comes with age. And something that I think both of us have realized, too, is, I mean, I've been told my whole life, I think more so than you, that I'll age into my type.
Yeah.
I've been told that since I was 16. That when I'm 30, that's when I'll start seeing results.
Yeah.
And that's been very true, because finally I am old enough, and I'm not quite old enough yet, but I'm finally getting in the door to these places that I'm no longer just the ingenue because I'm young. Mm-hmm. You know? And so I can actually be myself. I can wear the pants that are comfortable. I'm not having to fit into things because now I'm the right age that people want to see a full person and not just, like, someone who's in love.
Exactly.
And so what does that mean? Because I've never been this age before, so what roles have I, like, never even thought of before? Mm-hmm. You know, like, you playing Sarah Jane Moore, you never thought about that.
No, never in my life, which is hilarious because the entire cast was like, yeah, that's obviously your role. Like,
obviously.
What do you mean, obviously? Like, that was news to me. So, yeah, it's just crazy.
But I think I love what you said about, like, it has nothing to do with your capabilities.
Yeah.
Because, like, I do think that I've put stake in what roles I'm right for into my capabilities.
Yeah. Which is, whenever we discuss, like, privately as friends, like, what roles you want to go out for, I do always try to, like, make a point of saying, I think you could absolutely play the X role, but I think they're gonna see you for Y role.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you do that, and it's, and it is really important to be because, reminded of those things.
Yeah, like, just because other people cannot see what you can do doesn't mean you can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is a very little empowering moment. I know. We're at the tail end.
I love. Dear World, the musical.
Dear World. Wow. I did dreamcast one other character, and it's the young male lover. My first thought was, like, an Aaron Tveit type. Yeah. But then I was like, you know what? We just saw him in Light in the Piazza. I want to see more of Mr. James D. Gish.
It's so funny because I was like Derek Klena for this part.
Yeah.
And they are, him and Mr. Gish are the same type.
James.
Also, he was so good.
So good. Mr. Gish, I'm obsessed with you. I think you're so good.
Obsessed.
Like, the vocals.
The fact that both of us leaned over and said, can you imagine Matthew Morrison in this role? No. Like, there's no... I can't, like, even think about what that would be like.
No. Yeah. It was crazy. Like,
how did he sing that score?
I have no idea. I would love to talk to Matthew Morrison about how he sang that score, because that was not fucking easy.
And no. That is a true, like, operatic baritenor vocal line.
Yeah. And I was never worried for James D. Gish.
No. Never. That one, do you remember that? I forget what song it was, but when he, like, sings that super high note for just 1 second.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what song was it. It wasn't Un Passeggiata.
Is it the one where he's God, he sings so high in so much of the show.
I know, this though was, like, very high.
Yeah, is it the one where he, like, comes in and is asking for help from his dad?
Maybe, I don't remember. I didn't feel like it was a moment of panic. Yeah. But maybe it was, I don't know. God, it was just flawless.
But there was a moment, and I heard you, like, laugh at me a little bit, where he, like, just so seamlessly, like, flipped up into his falsetto.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, that's, the very end. It's, Love to Me.
Oh, yeah, okay. Maybe that's not what I'm talking about, but go ahead, keep talking.
But he just, like, so seamlessly just, like, flipped up to his falsetto, and I went, ooh. And you...
Yeah.
Ooh. It was so good. It was so good. Yeah, I'm a big fan.
And then someone vomited in front of us.
Someone had such a good time. They were so impressed, they just threw up.
Oh my god, that was crazy.
That was crazy. Yeah, so...
I have one more casting choice.
Let's hear it.
For the sewer man?
Of course.
Ethan Slater.
Yes.
That's
it. Let's get Ethan Slater a little dirty, a little grimy. Yeah.
I also cast Danae Benton as the young prostitute, because I thought she would sing the shit out of that song.
Absolutely, yeah, she would be great.
Yeah.
Like, she would absolutely sing the shit out of it. So, that ends our month of City Center Encores. What a trip it's been. We've learned a lot.
What work we gave ourselves.
Yeah, we really were like, let's make something really hard for us.
Yeah.
In the month of June. It's very homophobic for us to decide these shows.
Happy Pride.
Happy Pride. If you're not proud of yourself, I'm proud of you.
I'm not.
Sleaze not, but I am. For July, we're having a real American Revolution themed month.
The opposite of Pride month.
The opposite of Pride. We're doing hair in 1776. So, you can check our Instagram to find out when those are coming out. And until then, stay safe out there. Or don't. I'm not your mom. Do whatever you like. And we'll see you later.
Adieu. Bye.
Goodbye. Thank you so much for listening to This Podcast Won't Run a Week. If you'd like to support us, be sure to rate, review, follow, like, and subscribe wherever you listen. If you're interested in additional very cool content, you can head over to patreon.com/thispodcastwon'trunaweek. You can check out all of our social media information as well as performance links in the description of this episode. Thanks for listening. We love you lots. Goodbye.